Baby, it's cold outside. Welcome to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM here in Houston. I'm Mike Koenig. I'm here with Egberto Willis. Okay. You know, I don't always know what I'm going to lead off with. This is open forum, by the way, so you can call in about anything you want, any story that's annoying you, making you excited, anything you're curious about that I can either commiserate with or suggest advice on. And the phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT, or, as it is sometimes called, 713-JAM-KPFT, I believe. So, what is the first thing I want to talk about today? I have to say, I think it's about the bombing of the NAACP office in Colorado. Apparently, it wasn't a serious bombing because the gasoline can didn't explode and nothing burned down and nobody was killed. So apparently, it's less worthy of reporting than finding the freaking tail of Air Asia off Malaysia. I mean, I understand that that's an important story. A lot of people's lives were lost. We all fly. We want to make sure we know what's going on when a plane goes down. But we had a freaking bombing in Colorado. If that had been almost any other story, I mean, look at what's going on with AirAsia. They don't know anything, but that doesn't stop them from reporting it. They do speculation. They do verbal outgassing. They do guessing. They fill space. They fill space. But somehow the NAACP office gets bombed and you actually have to hunt for it. Even on like the Google News page, if you can find it, it's about 2/3 of the way down. And it's like a little story. Now, on the one hand, I understand that if there are no new facts in a story, it's hard to report and say, yep, it happened. We still don't know anything. But that hasn't stopped them from doing that with endless, numberless other stories. So apparently not having new information has never been an obstruction to blowing air on a story. So what you kind of have to conclude is they don't care. NAACP. Now, I'm going to go a little aside and say that when there were bullet holes and thrown rocks at Democratic campaign offices, that story also didn't get a lot of traction. I am becoming a very cynical old guy. I really, really am. I feel like I'm getting more and more radical in my leftistness. Egberto, do you think? I mean, you've now known me for a few months. Have you seen a general alteration in my political orientation?
I think I've implied that to you several times.
You have implied it to me, but yes. Now I'm asking you straight
yes,
out cold.
I'm saying straight. I think what's happening is what happens to a lot of people, my dear friend, and that is exposure to a lot of different things, a lot of different people, a lot of different callers. All of that combined into changing.
But old guys aren't supposed to change.
No, I don't believe that at all.
Really?
I don't believe
that
at all.
That's because you're not an old guy.
I am an old guy.
You're an aging guy. There's a difference.
But, you know, I think all people change. I mean, I watch people change, you know. But it has to come from within.
Okay. Open lines. Open forum. 713-526-5738, or else you're just going to hear me talk to Egberto and Egberto talk back. And not to say that's not interesting, but, you know, open forum. By the way, Egberto has his own show Monday nights at 9 o'clock, Politics Done Right. Here we do politics, okay. And sometimes we don't do politics, but that hasn't been the case lately. I do want to mention Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. If you want coverage, now I've gotten a little different information on this, and I didn't do my job and actually have time to check. But I know that if you want to be covered for 2015 beginning February 1st, you have until January 15th, figure 11:59 p.m. on January 15th, to sign up and pay your premium to be covered as of February 1st. I don't have the phone numbers handy, but healthcare.gov is the website, healthcare.gov, and there are phone numbers there, and you can call 24 hours a day. So if you want to call after this show at 12:05 a.m., you can do that. And they will give you guidance and information and help. And when I was exploring there, I actually found them to be very nice at a time when it was very, very challenging for them. Now, I have also been told that the actual drop-dead deadline is February 15th for March 1st coverage. Egberto, is that correct? That's correct. So this is the next-to-last deadline. Now, of course, if you want coverage as soon as possible, then this would be the time. The reason that one of the reasons this is kind of uppermost in my mind, aside from the fact I think it's an important public service, I had hoped to get the Enroll America people on for today's show, and we had it tentatively scheduled, but apparently they had a traveling situation, so they could not be on the show. And to have them on next week, I don't know if that would be useful, but we are going to try to have them on again. Remember, healthcare.gov takes you directly to the Obamacare, the ACA website. The phone number is on the website 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for any questions or information you require. Enrollamerica.org is the website for non-governmental assistance. So anyone out there who feels a need, who feels that they might either want to change their insurance. And by the way, even if you got Obamacare last year, I would strongly, that was my foot, I hit something. I would strongly recommend that you look at the options again, because these things do change. It may be that the best program for you last year is the second or third best program for you this year. The companies are constantly changing this. When you've dealt with medical insurance for a while, you understand. So it doesn't hurt to look, even if you're covered. Okay, so Obamacare. Article I came across, aside from the bombing of the NAACP building in Colorado Springs, which I have to tell you is hard to find information about. Article in Reuters, off-duty black cops in New York feel threat from fellow police. And I'm going to read some pieces of this because nobody's calling me, 713-526-5738. But it's interesting. A number of black NYPD officers say they've experienced the same racial profiling that cost Eric Garner his life. Mayor de Blasio must try to ease damaged relations with a police force he feels hasn't fully supported him, but what's emerging now is that within the thin blue line of NYPD, there is another divide between black and white officers. Reuters interviewed 25 African-American male officers at NYPD, 15 of them retired, 10 still serving. All but one, so 24 out of 25, said that when off-duty and out of uniform, they had been victims of racial profiling. And this included being pulled over for no reason, having their heads slammed against their cars, getting guns brandished in their faces, being thrown into prison vans, and experiencing stop and frisks while shopping. The majority of the officers said they had been pulled over multiple times while driving, and five had had guns pulled on them. Social psychologists from Stanford and Yale Universities and John Jay College of Criminal Science have conducted research, including a 2004 study called Seeing Black: Race, Crime, and Visual Processing, showing in the study, apparently, that there is an implicit racial bias in the American psyche that correlates black maleness with crime. One professor cited a 2010 New York State Task Force report of police-on-police shootings the first inquiry of its kind that found that in the previous 15 years, officers of color had suffered the highest fatalities in encounters with police officers who mistook them for criminals. That is to say, non-white officers were more likely to be killed by cops than white officers. One of the better-known cases apparently involved a black policeman by the name of Harold Thomas, decorated detective who had retired after 30 years of service. Before 1 a.m. on the night of on a night in August 2012, Thomas was leaving a birthday party at a nightclub, trendy nightclub, wearing flashy jewelry, green sweatpants, and a white T-shirt. He walked toward his brand-new white Escalade when two white officers approached him. There is dispute on what occurred next, but an altercation ensued, culminating in Thomas getting his head smashed against the hood of his car and then spun to the ground and put in handcuffs. And he claims, if I was white, it would not have happened. So, we got some problems, folks. We do. And, you know, I'm a little late to this game, but it's really hard not to see that there is a problem here. I think we're all part of the problem. I make this distinction all the time between racism and prejudice. First impressions are prejudice. If you see somebody that on site or within 5 minutes you decide you don't like, for whatever reason, you can't even articulate a reason, that's a prejudice. That's not necessarily racism. You can be prejudiced without being racist. You cannot be racist without being prejudiced. So, important distinction that I constantly want to get across. And now I have a caller. And before I take Jeff, out of courtesy, let me do my quick station ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig and Egberto Willis here on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Jeff, you're on the air. How you doing tonight? Yeah, hello? Jeff.
Oh, hey. I just had a question because I've recently, like, run into this pretty troubling dilemma with my job where... this is regarding health insurance.
Okay.
So I'll do what I can. I got a new job, and they promised me I was going to get health insurance. And so I waited the 90 days or whatever, and I went and asked the human resources department, you know, what do I need to do to get health insurance here? And they gave me the packet and said, well, you know, your 90 days is up after the deadline, but you know, we'll send you a letter and you can still sign up or whatever.
Okay.
So they mailed the letter Christmas Eve, and I didn't get it till a day before New Year's Eve, and then apparently it was too late is what they're telling me now. So my question was, can I actually sign up for Obamacare even though my job offers me health insurance?
Absolutely. And I say this with a fair degree of confidence, and the reason is because while your company offers health insurance, they are not offering it to you. They are claiming that you've already missed the window. So when they ask you, does your job offer health insurance, you can say, yes, but I'm not yet eligible, and I would like to be covered for 2015. So if you're still working there when their next open enrollment period occurs, at that point you can switch to them if that's a better deal for you. Typically it is. But again, I would recommend, could you do me a favor, Egberto, could you look up the phone number for healthcare.gov so that I can give that out? Yeah, I suspect that you can enroll for 2015, and then whether you continue in 2016, that's fine. I will also point out that in healthcare.gov, as well as other medical insurance plans, while they have an open enrollment period, there is usually a stipulation in the plan that says that if you have a significant change of life circumstances, you can change your enrollment status. So, for example, if you have a spouse who had medical insurance on their job, but they lose their job, you can, in mid-year, enroll them on your insurance typically, because that's a change of life status over which you had no control. So this is something over which you had no control. You wanted insurance, you questioned insurance, and they said, I'm sorry, it's too late in the year for insurance. You have to make other arrangements. So you've got that option.
They were actually trying to get me to sign a waiver form saying that I didn't want their insurance.
You didn't
but
do
I,
that.
I didn't want to do that.
Good.
Because I wanted it, but they just wouldn't give it to me.
You see, this is what we have unions for, because HR works for the company, and a union rep could go to them and go, this ain't fair. But be that as it may, I just thought I'd throw that in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you actually telling me that they actually asked you to sign a waiver saying you don't want insurance, even though you've been asking for insurance?
Yeah, that's what they told me today.
What kind of company is that?
Yeah, don't mention a name.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to think of an articulate way to say it, but
what line of work are they in?
It's a I work like the mechanical side of it, but it's a tourist destination,
Okay. I'm curious, so, when did you start employment there?
September.
Okay, so September, October, November, December, you had to wait 90 days, and they're telling you, my first thought is they're wrong.
Yeah,
because this is your standard change of circumstances clause, where you could not join during open enrollment because you hadn't worked there long enough. So I can understand why they would say that you can't sign up until the first of the following month. That's pretty common. But I would definitely... I would question that, but in the meantime, I would go and look at the Obamacare and discuss this situation with them. So, you know, if you end up getting medical insurance from your company, where does that leave you? Or do you need to follow through the rest of the year? But I think that would... Are you there, Jeff? I think we lost you. Okay, if you're still listening, you can call back if you have any other questions. But Egberto, at some point, is going to try to get us a phone number. And
I was about to type it in. It's 1-800.
Okay.
318-2596. Again, that number is 1-800-318-2596. That'll give you the
2596. And while I would encourage you to listen to the rest of the show, you can call them right now. So 1-800-318-2596 is Affordable Care Act, healthcare.gov, Obamacare, 24/7. So any time of the day or night, you can call and you will get somebody on the phone. Sorry you got cut off there, Jeff. But I would go back to HR and ask them to reread their policies on that. I think they are mistaken, but you do have ACA as a fallback.
I think they know exactly what they were doing. I think they knew exactly what they were doing. For them to ask him to sign a waiver and for them to ask him to wait 90 days, and I mean, it is what some of these companies are doing. It's pathetic. It's selfish. It is all the reason why we really needed single-payer health care instead of this thing.
You know, I've got two responses to that. One response is, I try never to attribute to malice that which is adequately explained by stupidity. I would also point out that the most pervasive form of corruption is butt covering. So if somebody made a mistake, and they know they made a mistake, and now they're trying to get him to sign a waiver so that it looks like he made the decision so that their butt's covered, that to me is an entirely feasible scenario. Yes, it is possible that they just wanted to deny him health insurance, but I'm not thinking that was the case. I think someone messed up, and I think they're trying to cover their rear ends. But regardless, the guy doesn't have health insurance, and that's the important part here. So anyway, open lines, 713-526-5738. Chris Matthews said something interesting. Let's see. I'll read the excerpt. MSNBC host Chris Matthews slammed Tea Party Republicans on Tuesday, likening them to white supremacist organizations like the one currently linked to House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, Republican of Louisiana. How do you think Louis Gohmert feels toward David Duke? Matthews asked. How do we know? What do you think of Ted Yoho and that crowd? Those guys believe Obama was somehow an illegal immigrant from Africa because they can't stand the fact he's an African-American. Let's be honest about it. They're not that far from the crowd they refuse to associate with. And they referred to the point that in 2002, Scalise had introduced himself to a reporter as David Duke without the baggage, to which Chris Matthews quipped, he's still got the baggage. So he's got new baggage. It's always nice to have new baggage. You know, when I go traveling, I always like when my baggage is new so it doesn't spew contents all over the place. I think Scalise has old baggage because that's where he's at now. The observation has been made, perhaps you folks have heard, that Eric Cantor, who is the only Republican Jew in the Senate, is now being replaced by a reputed and alleged white supremacist or white supremacist sympathizer. You know, you look at the Republican Party, I have to believe that at some point this party will die. I don't know that they'll cease to exist, but I think that this party will die as a major influence. I have a feeling that there are many Republicans who are not happy with the direction of the party, and if you get some significant names starting a new party, maybe they'll just call themselves the New Republicans. I don't know. They're reasonable Republicans. But I just can't see this going on indefinitely. This is becoming, this is, you know what? This is becoming like the post-Civil War Democrats. And the Democrats are becoming the party of Lincoln. It's kind of ironic when you think about it. It just goes to show how history inverts things. Okay, we have a caller on the line. CC, how are you doing tonight? You're on the air.
Oh, I'm doing just fine. How are you?
Okay. What's on
your
mind?
Look, I have a question. When these insurance companies refuse to pay claims, let's say, for instance, you file a claim, and they come up with some old botched up excuse why they're not going to pay the claim, for, in some cases, for no reason, what happens to that money when that money is not paid to the person that entitled to, you know, being paid for their particular claim?
As I understand it,
and how do you, and the second part, yeah, and how do you get a company to pay that, or how do you make that entity pay that claim when they fail to uphold that agreement in that contract, which is your policy?
Okay, let me first say this. The first thing is, before the ACA, medical insurance companies were typically taking a profit. Well, not a profit, but they were typically taking money over and above medical payouts of something like 30 to 35% of the funds they took in. The ACA put a cap on that of 20%. So they cannot take more than 20% of the income. 80% of their income must go to pay medical claims. So that's the first thing. The other thing, without being too specific, can you give me an idea what kind of thing we're talking about here?
Well, let's say for an accidental. You have an accident, you have an automobile accident, and the insurance company say, well, we're not going to pay the claim, we're going to investigate. And you go and you give a deposition or a statement, and you under oath, and you draw the rigmarole, and then at the end of the day, they still come up with some old illicit excuse. Well, we're not going to pay the, you know, we're not going to pay anyway. So you're there standing trying to battle a, you know, multi-billion dollar corporation.
Yeah. Okay.
Who makes these people submit without having to file lawsuits and go through all of the mediation, because you're paying your premiums on time every month, in
right,
some cases 30 years, 40 years without ever filing a claim, and you file one claim or two claims, then all of a sudden you find yourself looking for another insurance company.
Is there a single, is this like a single person accident, or
it could, it, well, single
hold
person,
on, hold on a second, let me finish the question. Hold on.
Maybe one or two, three people in the car, you know.
All right, let me finish the question. Was this a single-person accident, or was there another individual or circumstance involved? And the reason I'm asking is because, is there someone else who might be assigned legal liability for the damages?
Well, I know of one case where a guy sitting at the light, he gets rear-ended from behind, car gets totaled.
Okay, the guy who rear-ended him is automatically liable.
He's liable, okay.
Period.
But let me tell you what happened in that case. The insurance company, which is Allstate Insurance Company, decided to take the guy that hit the car in front, who Allstate was, the guy who was sitting at the light was covered with Allstate. They then decided to put the guy in the insurance company when the guy who hit the car at the light gave the police officer a insurance card saying he was with GEICO.
Okay.
So as they got into the investigation and found out that the guy never was with GEICO, he didn't have no insurance. So the guy that was sitting at the light had to use his what they call under motorist insurance.
Yeah, uninsured motorist.
Oh, uninsured motorist coverage. So instead of them, the Allstate Insurance Company paying the under motorist insurance coverage, they decided they were going to put the guy that hit the car in at the light in the company and defend him, and didn't defend the guy that got hit.
I've heard something about that. I think I didn't hear that it was Allstate. I heard actually that it was Geico.
Okay.
Yeah, situation like that. First, okay, let me say this.
And it's fraud is what it is. It's insurance companies doing fraud.
No, it's legalism. Which
is what?
Legalism. In other words, it's not necessarily right, but it's legal.
Well, if you put your if you perpetrate a fraud, it's called fraud on the courts. If you say, well, hey, look, and you have to go to court, you say, well, look, Judge, this guy was in our company at the time of the accident, so that makes Geico responsible, not Allstate. Well, you're lying to the court and the judge. You're lying to the jury. You're lying to
all of these people.
When they, you know, it's fraud.
As
it's
I understand,
fraud.
As I recollect the case, and I only recollect it vaguely, they were not claiming that the guy who rear-ended their customer was insured by them. They were using some kind of angle that, under the circumstances of the accident, they did not have to pay out to their insured. I don't remember the specifics, unfortunately, but it was not what you said. They weren't lying and saying he was covered. They're using some kind of legal loophole to avoid paying. Let me give you a good example of a really egregious loophole. There was a case where a woman died in a house fire. When they did the autopsy, and this is most often the case, the woman did not die from the fire. She died from smoke inhalation from the fire. She had a life insurance policy. The insurance company refused to pay. The basis on which they refused to pay is that one of the exclusions in the life insurance policy was death caused by air pollution. So they are equating smoke inhalation from a house fire to air pollution. That was the legalism that they were using in order to avoid paying. Now, that went to court. I don't know the resolution of it, but that was an actual case. Now, as far as what you're talking about, do you have a specific case that you're involved in, if I may ask?
No, I'm not involved.
Okay, so you're just talking
just giving
in general.
You an example, asking how
okay.
did you get
all right. In general.
A situation like that done. And then when they went to the, from what I understand, they went to the Department of Insurance, and the Department of Insurance didn't do much of nothing either.
Okay, and you're talking.
Well, you need to go ahead on and give the examination on. So you give the examination, and they didn't do much of anything either.
But
so I'm saying, well, hey, you know what? You go back and you sue Allstate. You go back and you sue the Department of Insurance for closure with prejudice. And hey, you know what? Then you end up with way more money than you would have gotten if you got the case settled from day one. You sue them for closure for prejudice.
Right, hold on a second. Hold on.
Yeah.
First of all, I think we're talking way too much hypothetical here. Because when you're talking hypothetical, you can throw out all kinds of things that may not even be relevant to a real situation. What I would say is this. You're not talking about medical insurance here. You're talking about auto insurance and liability insurance.
Auto insurance, okay. But sometimes it ties over into medical. Because you end up having medical expenses from the injury you sustained with the accident.
You got to get
therapy when you get injured.
The medical
accidents.
Insurance should cover your injuries. What they may do is sue the insurance company of the liable person in order to recover that. That's called subrogation,
mm-hmm.
where you end up not suing the person who injured you because your medical insurance covered you. You can sue for whatever wasn't covered out of pocket. But the insurance company will subrogate their claim. You will subrogate your claim, rather, to the insurance company so that the insurance company can then sue the person who is liable. It pays. Anyone out there, even if you're hard up and you're really struggling to make your bill payments, if you call your insurance agent, uninsured motorist coverage is like $5 semi-annual. I mean, it's really, really cheap because the law requires that people carry insurance, so the number of uninsured motorists is really, really low. So actuarially speaking, you're very unlikely to have an accident with an uninsured motorist, so it costs almost nothing. There are just certain coverages that it pays to have because they are so useful, and this is my personal opinion. I'm not saying this is a professional. You can't take me to court on this, but my personal experience is that this is one of those things where it's so cheap, uninsured motorist pays, and that would pay for your medical expenses or at least pay for your out-of-pocket medical expenses. And then what they'll do is they'll try to recover from that uninsured person whatever they can.
Now the question, what happens to the money that's supposed to be paid out to the client when the insurance companies don't pay the client that's been injured?
Okay, that goes back to, you're talking now about auto insurance. Auto insurance.
Auto or medical.
Okay, medical is different. Because medical, now you go back to the Affordable Care Act that puts a cap of a 20% non-medical expense limit on. So if a company is collecting $100 in medical insurance, they have to make sure at least $80 of that goes to medical expenses paid out. And if they exceed that amount, then the next year they have to cut premiums or they have to give rebates to customers, one or the other. Now, when you're talking about auto insurance, I'm not quite as knowledgeable about the limitations and regulations on those sorts of things. You know, you can always go to small claims court.
Well, I always know there's no statute of limitations on fraud. So, you know, your federal rule of civil procedure says that if you just discovered it, it starts from the time of discovery.
Yeah,
so if you've just discovered what happened and you didn't have knowledge of it prior to then there's no statute of limitations.
Yeah, but fraud is different from loophole. You know, companies can make – I'll give you a perfect example. I once had a vehicle. I won't mention the name of the company, but they went bankrupt and then were reconstituted with government aid. And I had a work van, and that work van was in the garage. It was in service like 3 or 4 of the first 12 months I had it. And then the last thing they did was rebuild the transmission. I had a clear lemon law situation, and they refused to make good on it. So I had to take them to court. They forced me to take them to small claims court, and they had lawyers go there. They didn't dispute anything I had to say. They just wanted to hassle me and make me go to court. And I won the case. And I got basically everything I asked for. Now, was that right? Was that even smart from a customer service standpoint? No. But their corporate culture was, we don't pay nothing. We don't have to pay. And we're going to make you struggle
for it. Well, the thing is, that's how they make their money. As long as you let them do it, they keep doing it to you.
Well, of course.
Yeah. So that's why we have to change laws in this country and make absolutely sure that these laws that we are involved in are not partial but impartial. When time comes to serve us, we get the justified service that we deserve, just like the companies get the justified service that they deserve.
Let me ask you a personal question, which you don't have to answer if you don't want to. Did you vote in the last election?
I sure did. Yes,
excellent.
Sir.
And we have a very high percentage of voters calling into
this show. I wait for the next election so I can run and be first in line and vote there.
Well, the problem is the people that think the vote doesn't matter. And then we end up with these people that say government doesn't work. So then they run for office. They go into government. They make sure that government doesn't work. And then they say, you see, we told you so. Government is broken. So, you know, when you talk about passing laws. But, yes, you're right. We need better regulations. We need better laws. The laws need to be enforced, spirit as well as letter. And, you know, you get the government you vote for. And you and me vote, and Egberto votes, but there's 65% of the population on average that did not vote in this last election, and we got what we got.
And I'm discovering through that, since you mentioned the voting, there were some people votes that were rejected.
Yes. Well,
yes,
that's...
I mean, just rejected.
Yes.
I mean, just, you know, so, you know, that's
voter suppression laws, that's what it's all about.
People have to catch the bus to go to the voting polls, you know, or stand in rain or stand in long lines for hours at a time to cast a vote, you know. So I think we need to work better on making sure that every vote counts, whether it's one you like or don't like.
What you got to do,
sure people are treated
what
equal.
You got to do is vote in legislators who agree with you, as opposed to legislators who think that voter suppression is the way to stay in power.
Yeah,
because the laws in place, because the Supreme Court threw out a significant part of the Voter Rights Act, the laws that are in place are specifically intended to suppress the vote under the guise of integrity of the vote. Whereas, statistically speaking, voter fraud is much less common than election fraud. Election fraud happens at the governmental level. There are very few people that go in and try to vote as someone else or try to vote as
non-citizens. I've never seen it happen.
No,
you know, I mean, I've heard about it, but I don't. You know, I mean, that's, well, anyway.
It's literally less than 1 in a million. That's not an exaggeration. Literally less than 1 in a million. I got another caller on the line. I appreciate you calling, CC. Hope we'll talk again sometime.
Okay, thanks.
You take care. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig and Egberto Willis on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. We have open lines. It's open forum. We're talking about a lot of stuff, including insurance and Obamacare and the bombing of the NAACP office in Colorado and other stuff I haven't even brought up yet, like whether or not Kobani is ISIL's Verdun interesting historical metaphor that we might explore. Okay, 713-526-5738. Give me a call, and we have John on the line. I saw you chatting with Egberto before you got on the air, so is he explaining the whole T-shirt deal?
Yeah, I told him, I said, I've waited a year now.
Now, well, no, it hasn't been a year.
Yeah, I know, but it's a new year.
Yes, it has been a calendar.
Happy New Year,
Happy New Year to you. By the way, the reason that you haven't gotten your shirt now, I actually explored this a couple of weeks ago, and I have the shirt in my mailbox. Now, here's the problem. There are several different ways that we can sign it. We can sign it on the front. We can sign it on the back. We can sign it small. We can sign it El Grande.
Oh, I want it El Grande, buddy.
Okay, so I'm not going to worry about... like, where the belt line is. We're just going to go
no,
nuts.
No. I just might have it framed.
Okay, and you want it on the front.
with the
KPFT logo. Excellent. We'll try to take care of it tonight before we leave, and
Why, thank you, gentlemen. You're both very kind.
Of course
but
we
as
are.
I was telling Alberto.
Alberto?
Alberto.
Eat my shorts.
Alberto. I have a personal automobile insurance story.
Okay.
I was in, I just turned 25. Or 20,
really? You sound much older.
Someone ran a headlight, ran a red light, hit his head on. We had the green turn arrow.
Oh, man.
The car was in bad shape, et cetera, et cetera. He got the tickets, went to court, he pleaded guilty, et cetera, et cetera. So now I turn 25 and I get the new policy, and it went up quite a substantial amount.
Yes.
So I called up the insurance company, and I said, well, sir, I said, I turned 25. It's supposed to drop a little bit at this time when you haven't had any problems. He said, well, you had an accident. I said, yes, but I had uninsured motorist insurance, and the young man pleaded guilty. And I said, he's taking care of it. And my insurance representative said, well, we can't find him.
Hmm.
And I said, well, what does that have to do with me? He said, well, we can't find him to get the money back, so your insurance went up. So immediately, being a Chicago boy, I knew it was a scam.
Yeah.
Now, in those days, they used to have, I don't know if they still have it, but a reverse directory.
Yes, they still have it, but now you have to pay for it.
Yeah, and so I called up this guy, and, well, once again, being a Chicago boy, I intimidated him a bit. Anyway, I gave him his address, told him exactly where he lived and all of that. So now he was getting a little worried. I said, you said you were going to pay this. You pleaded guilty, et cetera, et cetera. I said, you have to start making payments on this insurance claim. And I got a little more verbally abusive. And he ended up, I gave him the phone number for my insurance agent. And I gave him the address for the insurance agent. This kid cut a $10 check. Okay, it was a few thousand dollars damage.
Mm.
And 40 years ago, that was quite a bit.
Mm, yeah.
And
that was a car.
Because
that was a late model used car.
Yeah, because he actually made a payment. It didn't matter if he sent them a dollar. He admitted that it was his fault, et cetera, et cetera. The reason why they didn't want to chase him down, they could have done exactly what I did.
Mm.
But I was insured. I was employed. They were going to get their money back by raising my premiums.
Yeah.
They had no.
Was that a major company, or was that like a major insurance company, or was that like a little independent agent?
Farmers.
Wow.
Yeah. But, well, there was actually another little tidbit to this thing. The front end was pushed in, and it tore apart one of the left front tire.
Mm.
And, I mean, there was hunks missing out of it.
I've seen that.
The insurance adjuster comes and checks all of this stuff out. He said, well, I said, what about the tire? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I said, what about the tire? He said, well, it's not flat. I said, there's hunks missing out of it. He said, well, it's not flat, so we can't do that. I said, okay. I looked at my wife. I said, honey, would you go in the house and get a we had a Polaroid in those days.
Uh-huh.
I said, we're going to take a picture of this tire and give it to him, and we're going to keep it. We're going to attach it to the insurance claim. And the man said, well, why are you going to do that? I said, because when that tire blows and I hit a school bus, you guys are going to be responsible for it. Boom. Okay, we're paying for the tire.
You're a Chicago guy.
Yeah.
So what? They had, like, extortion third grade course for you guys in Chicago,
yeah,
or what?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I took, I got up to extortion 301. Well, sir,
oh, man.
I'll, you know, as always, I love listening to your radios. Oh, I know, and I'm sorry I'm getting off the track, but you're talking about insurance. As you, I've been disabled.
Uh-huh.
And I went back to work at a major pharmacy. I only work a few hours a week because I've retired / disabled.
Yeah.
I still pay for Medicare and Social Security on my paycheck.
Yes.
Isn't that insane when the oil companies are still getting breaks, tax breaks, for exploratory to find more oil? And those laws were enacted in the 30s.
Well, without getting into whether we should be subsidizing the most successful and wealthiest industry in the history of the earth, I think from the employer standpoint, it makes sense because they don't know what your income is going to be. They don't know what your tax liability is going to be. Over a certain amount, you will pay taxes.
Uh-huh.
So I think from their point of view, you're going to get a 1040, not a 1040. What is it? It's not a W-2. What is it? Is it a W-2?
Yeah, it's not W-2 anymore. I can't remember.
Yeah, it's something else.
My wife handles that.
But essentially, you'll get that at the end of the year, and you'll file a return. And if you fall under a threshold, you'll get a rebate on all of that stuff from the government because you will have paid tax at an income level where you shouldn't have paid tax.
Yeah, but because I get retirement.
Right.
That jacks up my income.
Yes, but below a certain point of earnings, in addition to your retirement, you will get a refund.
Yeah.
And it's just going to get prorated. I mean, I'm not an expert on that stuff either. I know enough to be dangerous about a lot of things, but I'm not an expert in anything. So don't come to me and say, you told me.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I just speculated.
Jack of all trades.
Jack of all trades.
None.
Well, actually, I am a master of some.
I'm very flattered that you kept the T-shirt and waited until I told you what I wanted. That means that you knew that I'd be calling
you
back.
You should listen to the last show I did, which was December 24th, where I actually, within the first 5 minutes of the show, said, John, I hope you're out there and you call because I have a question about your T-shirt. Have you listened to the show?
Christmas Eve, I got out at 10:30.
Well, you can still listen to the show.
Yes,
still
I
there.
Do.
By the way, thinkwingradio.com, thinkwing.org, you can go and listen to shows that are no longer archived at KPFT because they only keep those things for 90 days. I have stuff.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, I've got shows going back to May of 2010 on a different station.
Wow.
I mean, I've archived pretty much everything that I had a copy of.
Boy, I'm even more flattered now.
So, yes, I actually called out for you on the public airwaves. John, call me. That is broadcast narrowcasting.
Well, it's wonderful that it's going to happen, but I still would have liked to have kept teasing you guys for another few weeks.
Yeah, well, I don't like to be teased, so we're going to wrap this baby up.
Okay. Take care, my friends, and once again, Happy New Year.
Same to you. You take care, John. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig and Egberto Willis here on KPFT 90.1 FM. And they used to have all of the other... Okay, we have 89.5 FM in Galveston. I don't normally mention that. But if you're in Galveston and you're listening on 89.5, you know we're not on 90.1. So it's kind of self-evident, isn't it? It's just kind of a station ID thing. Okay, open lines, 281... I'm about to give out my cell phone number. 713-526-5738. We don't want to be giving out my cell phone number. No. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. I have started getting information on Twitter. I now consider Twitter not exactly a news source, but an information source. I actually find that from the people I follow and the people they retweet, I am sometimes alerted to ideas or stories that otherwise I would have known nothing about. There is a gentleman by the name of Bob Krause up in Iowa. He's a public service guy. He has run for office a couple of times. And he tweeted something that I thought was a really interesting kind of historical analogy. He said, quote, "Kobani has become a Verdun to ISIS, a monster bleed of lives and assets. Though not geographically strategic, Daesh, which is another term for ISIS, couldn't abandon the fight." I thought that was really interesting. It takes a knowledge of history to draw that kind of parallel. For those of you who are not familiar, the Battle of Verdun occurred in the First World War. I think it occurred in like 1916, 1917. And it was originally an attack planned by the Germans where they felt that they would attack the French at this strategic point where they could attack from three sides. And that in the words of the German general who planned the battle, they would bleed the French white. Battle of attrition, perfectly reasonable military strategy. Unhappy for the guys involved, but perfectly reasonable military strategy. It turned out that it was probably the bloodiest and one of the longest battles of the entire war. I was reading that they had 60% casualties on both sides. That's a lot. When you consider that the average war may be 30% of your military people are actually in combat, that's a high number. It's sometimes as low as 10%. And that maybe 10% of the people involved actually end up typically as casualties, particularly if you're on the winning side. 60% casualties is unbelievable. And, you know, what may be happening in Kobani, I've been seeing a little buzz about this. I don't have any good facts on it. But the buzz is, you know, originally Kobani was not seen as a strategic site. It was close to the Turkish border. It didn't really control any important crossroads. It didn't really control any important access to material or supplies. It was just part of their expansion and consolidation strategy. And as sometimes happens with battles, a battle that happens almost incidentally because of the political and material assets invested in it becomes a strategic battle essentially for propaganda and morale reasons. So you ended up in this small battle where it started to involve the Iraqi Kurds, to a much, much lesser extent, the Turks, the United States, some Western allies, some Arab allies. And now it became a battle that went from being just a routine, we need to take this to smooth out our lines, to an important political statement. And there have been comments coming around like, ISIS has lost some of their best veteran people that they've invested in this fight. This doesn't mean that it's true. This doesn't mean that ISIS will be destroyed soon. But, you know, as in World War I, it could be seen potentially, if it's true, as something of a turning point. So that's kind of an interesting historical analogy. And it takes someone who knows history to draw that one, which is why it caught my attention. Open forum. You can talk about Verdun, the Second World War, or anything else that's on your mind. 713-526-5738. Have you heard about the earthquakes they're having around Irving, Texas? In a place where the last earthquake was recorded in 1950, and within recorded history, there are no other earthquakes in that area. And apparently, last night, they had, they had earthquakes ranging between 1.6 and 3.6. And 1.6, as I understand it, feels kind of like a subway train going underneath you in New York. 3.6 might be something like when a big truck used to go past my house, I used to feel the ground shake. So we're not talking huge, but enough to do minor damage like cracks in sheetrock and maybe cracks in brick mortar and stuff like that. And apparently, what was it, dozens, Egberto? Was it dozens, not hundreds, but dozens? And the earthquakes went on for over 24 hours. And, of course, the oil industry is saying, we didn't do nothing. all this hydraulic injection that we're doing into the deep earth that might lubricate hidden faults, it's not us. We don't got no fingerprints on it, man. And, of course, Texas, being the consumer and citizen-friendly state that it is, goes, well, we don't think it was anything to do with fracking. We might look at it. So, the article from the National Geographic, and I've got a link to this on today's show, thinkwingradio.com. I got a bunch of links to different articles that I have and haven't had a chance to discuss and have discussed. Are oil and gas industries behind the rare Texas earthquake? Scientists probe injection wells with possible ties to fracking. Now, I will say, if by any chance my neighbor Heather is listening to the show, she does freelance writing for the Houston Geographical Society. She is a little to the right of me. Wonderful person. I love her. She's great. But a little to the right of me. I personally think that that she's really a blue dog Democrat but doesn't know it. But that's a different thing. And Heather has suggested that she come on and we have this discussion about fracking. This might be a good time for me to explore that with her. So Heather, if you're out there, drop me a line or give me a call or I'll get in touch with you. I think that now we're going to have that discussion, because now that we're having earthquakes just 250 miles north of Houston, you know, we might be looking at a situation where the newly to be named San Jacinto Fault might now slide South Texas into the Gulf of Mexico. We might not be looking at California anymore. So now we might have to worry about South Texas. Now, of course, in Austin, they would, or at least in the capital, they would be thrilled with that, because South Texas is where most of the Democrats live. Most of the Mexican Americans live. So it's like, please, man, frack. Frack. Make that fault slide that part of Texas into the ocean. I'm just saying. I think we have a call coming in, 713-526-5738. We do have open lines. We still have a few minutes. If you call, I will try to get you on the air, but I may have to keep it really, really short. Let's see what else. Well, Egberto's getting that lined up. A couple of weeks ago, I was reading that Russia had set up a line of credit currency exchange with China. Kind of ironic that Putin's big gamble on trying to make Russia a world player again turns out that now they may end up being the tail to the Russian the Chinese dragon. Now they're going to be China's tail instead of China being theirs. It's amazing, you know, the best laid plans. Okay, I've got two Waynes. Really, two Waynes. Okay, Wayne number one, you're on the air. And, of course, Wayne number two isn't going to know which Wayne I'm talking about, so somebody has to say something.
Wayne? What?
You got to turn off the radio.
Okay, well, I guess that would be me.
I guess so. How you doing? Hello. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello, Mike. How you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Hey, all I want to call and say tonight is I heard you talking about those earthquakes up in Irving, Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would kind of make them Dallas Cowboys kind of glad they got out of Irving, Texas, huh?
I guess it might, but I don't care.
I know you're gonna have a bunch of Dallas Cowboys fans not calling in.
Yeah,
Texas,
you see, I'm like a total non-sports fan. So I mean, it's like there are stories I can't avoid, but for the most part, there are like several things that if you talk about on this show, I don't know nothing about, and sports is going to be one of them.
Well, I'll bring this back to you. You're gonna know good what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I want to say about this rigmarole that they've been having going on with Jerry Jones and what's that guy up there in New York? What's his name?
Oh, Christie. Yeah, we love
Christie. Yeah, now this, will this help you now?
Yeah, Christie.
Okay, now, I'm just kind of
New
wondering.
Jersey Governor Chris Christie is who we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm just kind of wondering, is this a sign of something that's about to come for the Dallas Cowboys, because not only have they found out that Chris Christie and Jerry Jones, or let's say Jerry Jones and Chris Christie, were some way involved in the tower that went up in New Jersey there, where Jerry Jones was a part owner in this.
Okay, we need to speed this up because I got Wayne number two that I want to get on.
Yeah, but Jerry Jones, Chris Christie was the governor of New Jersey and help sign off on this deal with this tower, where Jerry Jones was a part business owner.
Well, I'm going to cut this a little short, and I'm just going to say this, that the people in Dallas now should be happy that Chris Christie hasn't stopped traffic to Fort Worth.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
All right, I'm going to let you go, Wayne. I got Wayne number two on the line. I got like 1.5 minutes. Thank you so much for calling. Call earlier next time. All right, we got Wayne number two.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you?
And I have a lot of relatives from, I guess it was the number one earthquake area.
Whoop. Oh, we lost Wayne number two. Wayne number two, hurry, call right back. We'll try to get you on. In the meantime, I will reiterate Obamacare 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 1-800-318-2596, healthcare.gov. You can also, okay, we got Wayne number two back on. Wayne, sorry about that. What were you saying that we were trying to edit out there?
Well, you know, I'm from Oklahoma City, and was born and raised there. And you know, they've been having a lot of earthquakes the last 5 or 6 years because there's a big fracking area there. And it makes a lot of sense why fracking causes earthquakes. They drill these deep wells, and they throw all those chemicals down there that's designed to
lubricate drilling rigs.
Exactly, and
it's a lubricant.
And the wells are so deep. It's down around the plates of the earth, you know. So, of course, on those plates are going to slip and cause earthquakes. And I actually experienced a couple of earthquakes while visiting Oklahoma City. I asked my mom, how often does this happen? She said, about 3 or 4 times a week sometimes.
Oh, my Lord.
I said, wow. When
so
I
might
was
as well
kid,
move to California.
Yeah. When I was a kid, it never happened.
I'm going to tell you something.
Come around,
I'm
going
to tell you something really quick. And to me, it's kind of ironic that everyone is so surprised that fracking and injecting drilling fluid causes earthquakes. As long ago as at least 40 years ago, I was reading an article that they were doing some experimentation with injecting water into earthquake faults, small faults, just to see if they could avoid big earthquakes by causing small earthquakes, so you don't get the big ones. So at least 40 or 50 years ago, they knew that injecting just something like water into a fault was going to probably cause an earthquake. They were basing a whole technology on it, but they decided it was too risky. So what are we doing now? We're going for it with spades. Okay.
Well, you know, there's something to be encouraged about. You know, with all the with the oil glut right now, it's becoming more expensive to do fracking. You know, with a barrel of oil is like $50 or less. It's going to be too expensive to frack. So
do me a favor, Wayne.
To go away.
Call next week earlier, and we'll talk about fracking. Okay, you've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig and Egberto Willis here on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. And even though Jesse is here, I'm going to disappoint him. And I'm going to sign off with this. Never attribute to malice that which is adequately explained by stupidity. It's words to live by, man. Have a good week.
November, KPFT relaunched its morning program, Open Journal, with a whole new format. We're seeking volunteer production assistants to help make our 8 a.m. weekday program even better. The best part of all is that you can help from home or wherever you are. Aspiring production assistants should be able to help at least 2 hours a week and ideally have a Google account as we collaborate on our calendar and scripts this way. To get involved, email openjournal@kpft.org with the subject line production assistant. This is 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston. KPFT.
The following program may contain language or imagery that may be offensive to some listeners. Discretion is advised. The Federal Communications Commission permits the broadcast of some profanity during hours deemed to be safe harbor when children are less likely to be listening. KPFT upholds a stricter policy permitting the broadcast of sensitive material only between the hours of midnight and 5 a.m. The FCC forbids the broadcast of some sexual discussions or other suggestive matters regardless of the hour. If you have questions or concerns, please call the program director during business hours at 713-526-4000. This is KPFT Houston.
KPFT, we are on live right here, 90.1 Houston, Galveston 89.5, Goodrich, Livingston 90.3, and Huntsville 91.9. You already know what time it is. Eyes on Me Radio, man. We are live right here, man. It's good to be back, y'all. Trey Nine, you good to be back,
I'm
man?
I'm glad to be back. You know, the pre-recorded thing is okay.
Yes.
But there's nothing like being here live, talking to everybody. What's up, everybody?
Yes,
listening
man.
To the show, everybody. You know, from the Vance unit to the Wynn unit to... what other units? So
all the units, man.
There's quite a few units
yeah.
listening. We appreciate y'all. Thanks for the letters. We'll talk about that later.